great. I was going to talk a little bit about the idea of world missions and world Christianity, because I've realized we have yet to learn what we have yet to learn from global Christians. Probably about 10 years ago, and I'm a part of the United Methodist Church in North America, but about 10 years ago, a bishop of the Methodist Church in Nigeria said, when there was a lot of angst about what's happening with the church and can we even call Jesus Lord or anything like that, he said, you Americans, his name was Bishop Sunday, and he said, you Americans, just remember, just as the Africans took care of the baby Jesus, we will take care of him today. And that really struck me. And I didn't know exactly what he meant, but 2 years ago, I attended the global gathering of the United Methodist Church in Portland. And we debate and go through all of these issues. And because the United Methodist Church was kind of always viewed as one of the mainline American churches, but the United Methodist Church, unlike a lot of the other churches that are considered mainline churches, went global. And it's reflected in this general conference that meets every 4 years. And being there just felt like home. It was probably 40% were Americans, but then, the way that they determine who the representatives are who attend the general conference has shifted, and it is more truly representative of the actual numbers of United Methodists in the world. And probably a third of the people were Africans and sub-Saharan Africa, and a lot were Filipino, and within the United Methodist Church there were Europeans and there were Asians too. And we opened missionary conference in Mongolia, and we had to add 6 more bishops to the African continent within the United Methodist Church. And it just reminded me of the idea of our worldview here in North America is a little bit limited. Remember when there was the bombing and the terrorist attacks in France and everybody put French flags behind their Facebook page pictures? Or the one in Orlando and people put rainbow-colored flags behind their Facebook pictures? Well, the biggest tragedy in that era of tragedy, sadly, which feels like we're done with it, but was a killing in Baghdad that killed like 258 people in a terrorist attack. But nobody had hashtag pray for Baghdad. You know what I mean? They had all the other ones that feel like they've struck closer to home. And yet, it was such a reminder to me of the lenses by which I view the world. I wanted to read this scripture to and feel free to chime in or jump in or ask for clarification. Just a couple thoughts I wrote on worldview. It's not just your view of the world today. It's the lens through which you see the world today. For those of us who wear corrective lenses, did you ever think that you're really not seeing the world? You're seeing a piece of glass that reflects the world. Mine have become progressive. In the last 4 years. Yeah, I know. And really what I'm looking at is a piece of glass. You know, on a computer screen, in some ways, physically, it's a piece of glass that we look at, or some high-tech plastic. But whether they're rose-colored glasses or reverse lenses or mirrored shades, the lens is what anthropologists and social scientists call worldview. And it's yet another reason why I love Jesus, because Jesus himself taught this very thing 20 centuries ago. In Matthew chapter 6, starting in verse 22, he said this, "The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness?" And when you apply that to what modern sociologists and anthropologists are talking about in terms of worldview, I just think he nailed it. He nailed it. The worldviews that are even written in the accounts of the resurrection in Matthew, you know, the women had just found the tomb empty and met the risen Christ. And Jesus tells the women to tell the disciples. Now, Mark says they ran away, freaked out, and didn't tell anybody, but obviously they told somebody because we're all here. But listen to the worldviews going on here. Because Matthew 28:11 records, even the chief priest tried paying off the soldiers to say this, quote, his disciples stole the body. And then Matthew 28:15 starts, so the soldiers took the money and did as they were instructed. And this story has been widely circulated among the Jews to this very day. Then the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. When they saw him, they worshipped him, but some doubted. Then Jesus came to them and said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to obey everything that I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. And the worldviews that are represented are competing, even in the story of the resurrection, as told by Matthew. The resurrection belief, the stole the body scheme, those doubting. And I guess my question for us today is what's your worldview? Is it resurrection or is it a plot? And Jesus commissioning to make disciples as you go into all the world, is that just for those who have some sort of Uber call by God? Or is that for everybody, including all of us? And I guess I wanted to open our eyes just with some statistics about where we're coming from, because I heard it even yesterday, how I heard some conversations here at Epworth about how our church is getting older, our church is shrinking, there's not new people coming to our church. And so really what I wanted to do was give you the good news of what's happening globally within Christianity. Because it is a shift for those of us with a certain lens that we're looking at the world through. Christianity Today reported a few years ago, 85% of Yale University's Campus Crusade for Christ crew, 85% of those chapters are Asian. Whereas the university's Buddhist meditation meetings are almost exclusively attended by whites. The World Christian Encyclopedia recorded there are more Anglican Christians worshiping in the one country of Nigeria than in all the Episcopal and Anglican churches in Europe and North America combined. World Christian Trends reveals there are now more evangelical Christians in Nepal than in Spain. The William Carey Memorial Church in Leicester, England is now a Hindu temple, while the church in India, the traditional home of Hinduism, now sends out over 41,000 cross-cultural missionaries. There are now nearly 500 million Christians who are crossing cultural boundaries with the gospel. And the Christians aren't white Christians. They're coming from Asia, Africa, and Latin America. And that's why I say there's something going on, and we have yet to learn what we have yet to learn from these global Christians, especially the global South. They're the ones who are on the front lines of so much violence, and we need to be praying for them. And I think they're the ones that these majority world Christians is what a lot of sociologists are calling them now, have a lot to say to us. The Christian church in America is not shrinking. The Christian church in America is actually growing, but it's not growing among white Christians. Whatever gap there is from the shrinking of the white churches is being more than met by immigrant churches in the United States. which I think is kind of fascinating. Right. Right. Yeah. Well, and do you know, if you were to take the most, if you were to pick a quote unquote typical Christian, like if you were to show up on planet Earth and say, give me the most prominent example of what a typical Christian is, it's like a 22-year-old Nigerian woman is what a typical Christian would look like. And that's... that just made me laugh in a great way. And it, like, I mean, it just filled me with joy to think, you know, all the years of mission work, it actually did something. There's some trends that Tim Tennant talks about in a fascinating book that's about 5 years old now called, hang on, I wrote the name down so I could say it right. Invitation to World Missions. And it's exactly what we're talking about. The idea that what has happened, how has this happened, and how have we been blind to it? I'll throw out he lists 7 mega trends in world missions. And if one of them grabs onto you more than the other. One is the collapse of Christendom. The idea of in our American society, the whole Western world, for that matter, can no longer be characterized as Christian. And we get freaked out by debates about manger scenes in public parks. Dexter still has a manger scene, thanks to the firefighters in Dexter.
They're in your church.
A few of them. And the idea of Christendom sees Christianity at the center of the culture. And we assume we're in the majority. But really, it's a foreign language to a lot of people, even here in the U.S. Your neighbor may think they know about Jesus from watching the Da Vinci Code or reading the book kind of thing, you know. And it's not a we-they thing. It's simply an opportunity. So that's kind of the collapse of Christendom. The second one is the rise of postmodernism. And the idea of postmodernism challenges everything. Interesting, I have a Thursday men's group, and we're talking about how there's a couple of active young marrieds who just had babies in the last year. And they are so freaked out. Like one of them didn't want any person walking into their home for 6 weeks, the mom.
Because
germs. The baby. Because of the baby. I know. I know. And everyone's like, well, this is their first baby, and you know what I mean? And they're active, and they're involved, and I just laugh because Lee and I, our first son's name is Hunter, and we were living in Memphis at the time at Christ Methodist and working with Maxie Dunham, and on the way home from the hospital, you have to drive down Poplar Avenue, and you go right by Christ Methodist Church, so we're like, you know, we're like, oh, let's show him the baby. 3 days, you know. Right, why not? And don't sneeze on him. But I know, and there's another young couple, and you know, there's layers to the challenges, but they haven't listened to generations of people who have raised babies to say, put the baby on the floor. Lee is trying to reach out now with this wonderful young mom, just to say, why don't you try this? Yeah. There's a lot of sleep experts and anything. I mean, it's kind of this generational thing that I think postmodernism has made everybody question everything. I mean, I've Googled how to get from A to B because I want to make sure I'm on the exact shortest route. You know, I know the way. Or I'll Google word definitions. I know what it means, but I'm like, well, what did somebody else say about it? And there's this self-doubt that I didn't used to have, that I don't know if that's my age or if it's a reflection of kind of this idea that somebody out there knows best and I don't have the confidence to figure that out on my own. I've got to consult with somebody.
That's like going to the reviews of restaurants instead of just going yourself.
Yeah.
I won't go to a certain place if it doesn't get good reviews. And I'm thinking, but you've never been there. How do you know? on screens nowadays.
Yeah, yeah.
We just can't.
Isn't that funny? It makes us sound so old-fashioned. But, okay, I'm pulling this apart.
I'm not depending on machines too much.
That's it. That's why we're here. I was wondering if Epworth would have Wi-Fi.
You didn't think you'd come into the
I'm teasing.
The hotel for our guest ministers. It took us a while. But we now have a business center downstairs.
Oh, nice. Yeah. No, it's been helpful.
It's a great tool.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah, it's an amazing tool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and I thought about that yesterday. I had this message from Molly that I'd just gotten from her, and literally as almost as I was coming to church, and so it was on my phone, on Molly Link, who's supposed to be preaching, but it was about her mother, Sue Link, and asking Epworth to pray. And I really debated, but it was only there, and so I'm in the pulpit reading this off my smartphone, and I'm thinking, you know, and I know pastors that get up and read their sermon off their
iPads.
Or whatever, and it's the screens often get in the way for many of us.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a tool. There's nothing wrong with that.
It is a
yeah,
tool.
Yeah.
It's the amount of time that we spend.
Well, it's the doubt it puts in our hearts, I think, too.
And our elders especially, who don't use that so much in their life, I think it's, well, I don't fit here anymore because I don't do that.
Mm. So. You know, it's interesting. As dire as the situation seems to us here in North America, the truth is that Christianity was born into a missional situation. And I don't know how many people trace their roots to the Wesleyan revival of the 1700s, but the John Wesley and the Wesleyan movement, which changed the world, was born into a missional situation. And we find ourselves today in a missional situation. And and God used that, right?
Yeah,
God used
sure
that
did.
On his way home.
His objective.
As a horrible failure. Exactly. So that gives me hope. Another mega trend, in addition to the collapse of Christendom and the rise of postmodernism, is the collapse of the idea of the West reaches the rest paradigm in Christianity. And the idea that white people aren't the main missionaries anymore. Over the last 200 years, the people out there got it. And now, church historians are really claiming there's a fourth branch of Christianity. You know, in the beginning, there were all these churches, and that's why the whole New Testament was written, to try to bring some order and understanding and truth into those situations. And out of there rose kind of the one... There was... You could never really call it the one church, but in the 10th century, there was a definite branching, and there was the Roman Catholic, and there was the Eastern Orthodox Church, and their centers were Rome and Constantinople. Then 500 years later came the Protestant Reformation in Europe, in Northern Europe, but now they're really saying there's a fourth branch of Christianity that can't really trace its roots through the Protestant branch or through the Roman Catholic branch in other places in the world, you know, but still, because it, you know, has all the tenets of Scripture and the faith.
Is there a name for that branch?
I haven't heard a lingering name for it. And it's really only just being named that there's, as they're researching these movements of Christianity within other parts of the world, they don't trace them specifically to one missionary out of one of these branches, whether Orthodox, Catholic, or Protestant. And so it's indigenous would be the best name for it. 2 years ago, I was at a conference, and this pastor named Jacob, which would be Jacob, from Egypt spoke, but everything had to go dark in terms of cell phones, recordings, because of what he was talking about. And they were rescuing women and children mostly, going into the Middle East, the other parts of the Middle East, and rescuing them out of the ISIS, the clutches of ISIS, and bringing them to their Egyptian Coptic church of, you know, people of all faiths. But the idea that that the church has so does have so much power. A lot of the global connected churches do look for the United States for the gifts that God has given the U.S. of resources and help along the way. But the question is, can within the United Methodist Church, can we remain this global church? You know, and can we wake up to taking advantage of what is working and the Holy Spirit's power that is such a huge component of the Global South growth? So one other powerful story that do you remember the picture online of the 21 men in orange who were shot on the beach? The 21st was not Egyptian. He was a Muslim from Chad who joined the Christian group because of the example of their faith.
The Coptic Christians that were killed?
Yeah. And at least in that one instance, I mean, it's been happening so much so since. But the 21st guy was a Muslim, but he was so moved by the example of these Christians. They offered to release him if he would join ISIS, and he said, no, I will join those people. Their destiny will be my destiny. Sounds like Ruth. These Christ followers are the ones shaping our worldview now.
You didn't hear that on the news?
Well, I know, and that actually is news. I mean, the very definition of news is it's not normal, and yet that's all that we're fed all day long on our... on the live streaming. And I this isn't a bash the internet thing. It's, but it's impactful. A fourth big one is the changing face of global Christianity. We've been all but blind to one of the most dramatic developments in the history of Christianity because it was happening in Asia and Africa and Latin America. In South Korea, there are over 20 million Christians in a total population of 40 million. The largest church in the world is in Seoul, Korea. Hindu, which has been the cradle of the world's religions, Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, and Sikhism, they also have 60 million Christians, and they're planting churches in a horrible, hostile environment at such a pace. Scholars predict by 2050, we will have 100 million Christ followers there in India. But listen to this. The rise of the Chinese church is even greater. As recently as the Cultural Revolution of the 60s and 70s, the 1960s and 1970s, there will be 1 million Christians. There were 1 million Christians. Today, the Chinese church comprises over 90 million believers and is the fastest growing on the planet, averaging a growth of 16,500 new converts per day.
Per day?
Per day. Isn't that great news? I mean, it's unbelievable. I know. So many people here in the U.S. bemoan the collapse of Christianity, but it's just not so. And I think that really changed my perspective, because I have been wringing my hands over this old United Methodist Church thing, and I have been stressed out about, you know, what if we lose our tax-exempt status? And I don't want that, you know, as a pastor of a local church. But we have this emergence of huge centers of Christianity. And then with the globalization and immigration and urbanization and new technologies, some countries in Western Europe now have more folks worshiping in mosques than in churches with the globalization and the immigration. But with our U.S. immigration, that's the fastest growing demographic in the U.S. are Christian non-Anglo churches. It's happening. And if there is a way for us to learn from them or partner with them or welcome them in some way, we can't expect them to just morph into us if that's not the most comfortable language or style of worship. Here's something interesting. Kuwait is now 17% Christian. Mostly because of servants, you know, or housekeepers and workers that get brought in from places like India or the Philippines. they're migrant workers, but these immigrants are altering the religious demographics of that region.
Like Rome.
Right. That's right. In Kuwait. I mean, who'd have thunk? I love how that's just reflecting Jesus saying, make disciples as you go in all the nations. Yeah. Yeah. Do you know who two of my most constant contacts are? One is a guy named Itela in Congo, who I met at this general conference. He was an interpreter, and he's teaching evangelism and preaching in this to pastors in the Congo. So he has basically no income, because they don't have, you know, they're mostly given yams and stuff for their preaching. And I know the names of his family. I'm now his children's godfather. I don't know that I'll ever make it to the Congo. I don't know. And the other one is this girl, Lesti, who actually is living with us right now. But she was one of these Healing the Children kids that we hosted when she was 14 for heart surgery. And she's actually back 8 years later because she needs heart surgery right now. So she arrived in May and is staying till the end of July. But in between all those times, thanks to Facebook, she found us, and she doesn't really have a dad in her life, so I'm kind of the dad in her life. And Lee's been down to see her twice, and I've been down once. Have you been three times?
Yes,
ma'am. Lee's been down there three times, and I've only been once. She's in Honduras, and we're actually paying for her to go to college down there, and she's doing just great. So she's home taking care of Casey the dog right now, because she had a chance to go to Cedar Point with some Spanish-speaking friends. But, you know, every week she and I communicate thanks to Google Translate and Messenger, Facebook Messenger. She had exposure to it. She got plugged in with an evangelical youth group, I think, when she got home. Like, in Honduras, there's the Catholic Church and the Evangelical Church, which is everybody non-Catholic. So, but thanks to the new technologies and the idea of this globalization, we have opportunities. You can get the Bible almost every language now. There's like 30,000 languages, and Wycliffe and the others, you know, they've got 25,000 of them or so done. And so these other ones are coming in to these smaller regions, you know, Mayan and some of these other languages that don't show up on Google Translate, but so that people can read the word in their heart language. I think that what I think it means is that we have a huge opportunity before us. And we're not coming in as victims or as people on the tail end of something that's about to fall apart. But when I got involved with World Methodist Evangelism, and Eddie Fox, who I think has spoken here, we're not fighting a losing battle, other than you lose yourself in Jesus. We are fighting this we're fighting as a part of this amazing movement of God around the world, and we just got to do our part. And if that means, as a grandma, you have huge influence, you know, in the lives of grandkids, I'm assuming. And the idea of you know, praying for people, and the idea of connecting in some ways with folks around the world, whether through your local church or through a missions organization, it's a pretty exciting time. And I know we don't always feel that, but that's because our worldview lenses are only go as far as our own spheres of influence sometimes. But I think if we could help tell that story of, you know, the explosion of Christianity globally. I think that could get some of our family members' attention or do some more research. If you were just to Google Christianity in the Global South, or majority world Christianity kind of stuff,